At least these steps were human-sized, Susan thought, ignoring the chatter. Snow had come in through another gap in the roof. Albert's footprints had stamped around quite a lot here.
"Maybe the old hogfather crashed his sleigh," the raven suggested. "Squeak? Well, it could have happened. Pigs are not notably aerodynamic, are they? And with all this snow, you know, poor visibility, big cloud ahead, turns out too late to be a mountain. There's buggers in saffron robes looking down at you. Poor devil tries to remember whether you're supposed to shove someone's head between your legs. Then wham! And it's all over, bar some lucky mountaineers making an awful lot of sausages and finding the flight recorder. Squeak!
Yes, but he's an old man. Probably shouldn't be in the sky at his time of life. Susan pulled at something half buried in the snow. It was a red and white striped candy cane. She kicked the snow aside elsewhere and found a wooden toy soldier in the kind of uniform that would only be inconspicuous if you wore it in a nightclub for chameleons on hard drugs. Some further probing found a broken trumpet. There was some more groaning in the darkness. The raven cleared its throat.
"Ugh! What the rat meant about this place being like a mine," he said, "was that abandoned mines tend to creak and groan in the same way, see? No one looking after the pit props. Things fall in. Next thing you know, you're a squiggle in the sandstone. We shouldn't hang around, is what I'm saying."
Susan walked further in, lost in thought. This was all wrong. The place looked as though it had been deserted for years, which couldn't be true. The column nearest her creaked and twisted slightly. A fine haze of ice crystals dropped from the roof. Of course, this wasn't exactly a normal place. You couldn't build an ice palace this big. It was a bit like Death's house. If he abandoned it for too long, all those things that had been suspended, like time and physics, would roll over it. It would be like a dam bursting. She turned to leave and heard the groan again. It wasn't dissimilar to the tortured sounds being made by the ice, except that ice, afterwards, didn't moan, "Oh, me!" There was a figure lying in a snowdrift. She'd almost missed it because it was wearing a long white robe. It was spread-eagled as though it had planned to make snow angels and had then decided against it. And it wore a little crown, apparently of vine leaves. And it kept groaning. She looked up. The roof was open here, too. But no one could have fallen that far and survived. No one human, anyway. He looked human, and in theory quite young. But it was only in theory, because even by the second-hand light of the glowing snow, his face looked like someone had been sick with it. "Are you all right?" she ventured. The recumbent figure opened its eyes and stared straight up.
I wish I was dead," it moaned.
A piece of ice the size of a house fell down in the far depths of the building and exploded in a shower of sharp little shards. "You may have come to the right place," said Susan. She grabbed the boy under his arms and hauled him out of the snow. "I think leaving would be a very good idea around now, don't you? This place is going to fall apart."
"Oh, me."
She managed to get one of his arms around her neck. "Can you walk?"
"Oh, me."
It might have helped if you stopped saying that and tried walking.
"I'm sorry, but I seem to have too many legs. Ow!"
Susan did her best to prop him up, as, swaying and slipping, they made their way back to the exit.
"My head," said the boy. "My head. My head. My head feels awful. My head feels like someone's hitting it. My head. With a hammer."
Someone was. There was a small green and purple imp sitting amid the damp curls and holding a very large mallet. It gave Susan a friendly nod and brought the hammer down again.
"Oh, me."
"That wasn't necessary," said Susan.
"You telling me my job," said the imp. "I suppose you could do it better, could you?"
"I wouldn't do it at all."
"Well, someone's got to do it," said the imp.
"He's part of the arrangement," said the boy.
"Yeah, see," said the imp. "Can you hold the hammer while I go and coat his tongue with yellow gunk?"
"Get down right now." Susan made a grab for the creature. It leapt away, still clutching the hammer, and grabbed a pillar.
"I'm part of the arrangement, I am," it yelled.
The boy clutched his head.
"Oh, I feel awful," he said. "Have you got any ice?"
Whereupon, because there are conventions stronger than mere physics, the building fell in. The collapse of the Castle of Bones was stately and impressive and seemed to go on for a long time. Pillars fell in, the slabs of the roof slid down, the ice crackled and splintered, the air above the tumbling wreckage filled with a haze of snow and ice crystals. Susan watched from the trees. The boy, who she'd leaned against a handy trunk, opened his eyes.
"Oh, that was amazing,"
he managed. "Why, you mean the way it's all turning back into snow?"
"The way you just picked me up and ran. Ouch!"
"Oh, that!" The grinding of the ice continued. The fallen pillars didn't stop moving when they collapsed, but went on tearing themselves apart. When the fog of ice settled, there was nothing but drifted snow.
"As though it was never there," said Susan aloud.
She turned to the groaning figure. "All right, what were you doing there?"
"I don't know. I just opened my eyes, and there I was."
"Who are you?"
"I think my name is Bilious. I'm the god of hangovers."
"There's a god of hangovers?"
"An oh god," he corrected. "When people witness me, you see, they clutch their head and say, oh god.
How many of you are standing here?" "What? It's just me."
"Oh, fine, fine.
I've never heard of a god of hangovers."
"You've heard of Bibulus, the god of wine?"
"Ah, ouch!" "Oh, yes.
Big fat man wears vine leaves around his head, always pictured with a glass in his hand. Ow! Oh. Well, you know why he's so cheerful? Him and his big face? It's because he knows he's going to feel good in the morning. It's because it's me that
gets the hangovers," said Susan.
"I don't even drink. Ah! But who is it who ends up head down in the privy every morning? Oh, God."
He stopped and clutched at his head.
"Should your skull feel like it's lined with dog hair?"
"I don't think so."
"Ah," Bilious swayed. "You know when people say, I had 15 lagers last night and when I woke up my head was clear as a bell?"
"Oh, yes."
"Bastards. That's because I was the one who woke up groaning in a pile of recycled chilli. Just once, just once, I'd like to open my eyes in the morning without my head sticking to something."
He paused.
"Are there any giraffes in this wood?"
"Up here, I shouldn't think so." He looked nervously past Susan's head.
"Not even indigo-coloured ones which are sort of stretched and keep flashing on and off?"
"Very unlikely."
"Thank goodness for that."
He swayed back and forth.
"Excuse me, I think I'm about to throw up my breakfast."
"It's the middle of the evening."
"Is it? In that case, I think I'm about to throw up my dinner."
He folded up gently in the snow behind the tree.
"He's a long streak of whittle, isn't he?" said a voice from a branch. It was the raven. "Got a neck with a knee in it."
The O God reappeared after a noisy interlude.
"I know I must eat," he mumbled. "It's just that the only time I remember seeing my food is always going the other way."
"What were you doing in there?" said Susan.
"Ouch! Oh, search me," said the O God. "It's only a mercy I wasn't holding a traffic sign and wearing a..."
He winced and paused.
"Having some kind of woman's underwear about my person."
He sighed.
"Someone, somewhere, has a lot of fun," he said wistfully. "I wish it was me."
"Get a drink inside you, that's my advice," said the raven. "Have a hair of the dog that bit someone else."
"But why there?" Susan insisted. The O God stopped trying to glare at the raven.
"I don't know. Where was there, exactly?"
Susan looked back at where the castle had been. It was entirely gone. "There was a very important building there a moment ago," she said. The O God nodded carefully.
"I often see things that weren't there a moment ago," he said, "and they often aren't there a moment later, which is a blessing in most cases, let me tell you, so I don't usually take a lot of notice."
He folded up and landed in the snow again. There's just snow now, Susan thought. Nothing but snow and the wind. There's not even a ruin. The certainty stole over her again that the Hogfather's castle wasn't simply not there anymore. No, it had never been there. There was no ruin, no trace. It had been an odd enough place. It was where the Hogfather lived, according to the legends, which was odd when you thought about it. It didn't look like the kind of place a cheery old toy maker would live in. The wind soughed in the trees behind them. Snow slid off the branches. Somewhere in the dark there was a flurry of hooves. A spidery little figure leapt off a snowdrift and landed on the Ogod's head. It turned a beady eye up towards Susan.
"All right by you, is it?" said the imp, producing its huge hammer. "Some of us have a job to do, you know, even if we are of a metaphorical, nay, a folkloric persuasion."
"Oh, go away!
If you think I'm bad, wait till you see the little pink elephants," said the imp.
"I don't believe you."
"They come out of his ears and fly around his head, making tweeting noises."
"Ah," said the raven sagely, "that sounds more like robins. I wouldn't put anything past them."
The Ogod grunted. Susan suddenly felt that she didn't want to leave him. He was human. Well, human-shaped. Well, at least he had two arms and legs. He'd freeze to death here. Of course, gods, or even Ogods, probably couldn't, but humans didn't think like that. You couldn't just leave someone. She prided herself on this bit of normal thinking. Besides, he might have some answers, if she could make him stay awake enough to understand the questions. From the edge of the frozen forest, animal eyes watched them go.
Mr. Crumley sat on the damp stairs and sobbed. He couldn't get any nearer to the toy department. Every time he tried, he got lifted off his feet by the mob and dumped at the edge of the crowd by the current of people. Someone said, "Top of the evening, squire," and he looked up, blearily, at the small yet irregularly formed figure that had addressed him thusly.
"Are you one of the pixies?" he said, after mentally exhausting all the other possibilities.
"No, sir. I am not, in fact, a pixie, sir. I am, in fact, Corporal Nobbs of the Watch, and this is Constable Visit, sir."
The creature looked at a piece of paper in its paw.
"You, Mr. Crummy?"
"Crumley?"
"Yeah, right. You sent a runner to the watch house, and we have hereby responded with commendable speed, sir," said Corporal Nobbs. "Despite its being Hogswatch night, and there being a lot of strange things happening, and most importantly, it being the occasion of our Hogswatchly piss-up, sir. But this is all right, because Washpot, that's Constable Visit here, he doesn't drink, sir, it being against his religion. And although I do drink, sir, I volunteered to come because it is my civic duty, sir."
Nobby tore off a salute, or what he likes to believe was a salute. He did not add, "And turning out for a rich bugger such as your good self is bound to put the officer concerned in the way of a seasonal bottle or two of some other tangible evidence of gratitude," because his entire stance said it for him. Even Nobby's ears could look suggestive. Unfortunately, Mr. Crumley wasn't in the right receptive frame of mind. He stood up and waved a shaking finger towards the top of the stairs.
I want you to go up there," he said, "and arrest him."
"Arrest who, sir?" said Corporal Nobbs.
"The Hogfather."
"What for, sir?"
"Because he's sitting up there as bold as brass in his grotto, giving away presents."
Corporal Nobbs thought about this.
"You've been having a festive drink, have you, sir?" he said, hopefully.
"I do not drink."
"Very wise, sir," said Constable Visit. "Alcohol is the tarnish of the soul. Ossory, Book 2, verse 24.
"Not quite up to speed here, sir," said Corporal Nobbs, looking perplexed. "I thought the Hogfather is supposed to give away stuff, innit?" This time Mr. Crumley had to stop and think. Up until now he hadn't quite sorted things out in his head, other than recognising their essential wrongness.
"This one is an impostor," he declared. "Yes, that's right. He smashed his way into here."
"You know, I always thought that," said Nobby. "I thought every year the Hogfather spends a fortnight sitting in a wooden grotto in his shop in Ankh-Morpork. At his busy time, too."
"Not likely. Probably just some old man in a beard," I thought.
"I meant he's not the Hogfather we usually have," said Crumley, struggling for firmer ground. "He just barged in here."
"Oh, a different impostor. Not the real impostor at all. Well, yes. No."
"And started giving stuff away," said Corporal Nobbs.
"That's what I said. That's got to be a crime, hasn't it?"
Corporal Nobbs rubbed his nose.
"Well,
Nearly, he conceded, not wishing to totally relinquish the chance of any festive remuneration. Realization dawned.
He's given away your stuff, sir.
No, no, he brought it in with him.
Eh? Giving away your stuff now. If he was doing that, yes, I could see the problem. That's a sure sign of crime, stuff going missing. Stuff turning up? Whoa, that's a tricky one. Unless it's stuff like arms and legs, of course. We'd be on safer ground if he was nicking stuff, sir, to tell you the truth.
This is a shop, said Mr. Crumley, finally getting to the root of the problem. We do not give merchandise away. How can we expect people to buy things if some person is giving them away? Now, please go and get him out of here.
Arrest the Hogfather style of thing.
Yes.
On Hogswatch night.
Yes.
In your shop.
Yes.
In front of all those kiddies.
Mr.
Crumley hesitated.
To his horror, he realised that Corporal Nobbs, against all expectation, had a point.
You think that will look bad? He said.
Hard to see how it could look good, sir.
Could you not do it surreptitiously? He said.
Ah, well, surreptition, yes, we could give that a try, said Corporal Nobbs. The sentence hung in the air with its hand out.
You won't find me ungrateful, said Mr. Crumley at last.
Just you leave it to us, said Corporal Nobbs, magnanimous in victory. You just nip down to your office and treat yourself to a nice cup of tea, and we'll sort this out in no time. You'll be ever so grateful.
Crumley gave him a look of a man in the grip of serious doubt, but staggered away nonetheless. Corporal Nobbs rubbed his hands together.
You don't have Hogswatch back where you come from, do you, Washpot? He said as they climbed the stairs to the first floor. Look at this carpet, you'd think a pig had pissed on it.
We call it the Fast of St. Ossory, said Visit, who was from Omnia. But it is not an occasion for superstition and crass commercialism. We simply get together in family groups for a prayer meeting and a fast.
What, turkey and chicken and that?
A fast, Corporal Nobbs. We don't eat anything.
Oh, right. Well, each to his own, I suppose. And at least you don't have to get up early in the morning and find that the nothing you've got is too big to fit in the oven.
No presents neither?
They stood aside hurriedly as two children scuttled down the stairs, carrying a large toy boat between them.
It is sometimes appropriate to exchange new religious pamphlets, and of course there are usually copies of the Book of Ossory for the children, said Constable Visit, sometimes with illustrations, he added, in the guarded way of a man hinting at licentious pleasures.
A small girl went past carrying a teddy bear larger than herself. It was pink.
They always gives me bath salts, complained Nobby, and bath soap and bubble bath and herbal bath lumps and tons of bath stuff, and I can't think why, because it's not as if I hardly ever has a bath.
You'd think they'd take the in, wouldn't you?
Abominable, I call it, said Constable Visit.
The first floor was a mob.
Eh, look at them. Mr. Hogfather never brought me anything when I was a kid, said Corporal Nobbs, eyeing the children gloomily. I used to hang up my stocking every Hogswatch regular. All that ever happened was my dad was sick in it once.
He removed his helmet. Nobby was not by any measure a hero, but there was the sudden gleam in his eye of someone who'd seen altogether too many empty stockings plus one rather full and dripping one. A scab had been knocked off some wound in the corrugated little organ of his soul.
I'm going in, he said.
In between the university's great hall and its main door is a rather smaller circular hall or vestibule known as Arch-Chancellor Bowell's Remembrance. Although no one knows why, or why an extant bequest pays for one small currant bun and one copper penny to be placed on a high stone shelf on one wall every second Wednesday. The ceremony still carries on, of course. If you left off traditions because you didn't know why they'd started, you'd be no better than a foreigner. Ridcully stood in the middle of the floor looking upwards.
Tell me, Senior Wrangler, we never invited any women to Hogswatch Night Feast, did we?
Of course not, Arch-Chancellor, said the senior wrangler.
He looked up in the dust-covered rafters, wondering what had caught Ridcully's eye.
Good heavens, no, they'd spoil everything. I've always said so.
And all the maids have got the evening off until midnight?
A very generous custom, I've always said, said the senior wrangler, feeling his neck crick.
So why every year do we hang a damn great bunch of mistletoe up there? The senior wrangler turned in a circle, still staring upwards.
Well, it's symbolic, Arch-Chancellor.
Huh? The senior wrangler felt that something more was expected. He groped around in the dusty attics of his education.
Of the leaves, you see, they're symbolic of green, you see, whereas the berries, in fact, yes, the berries symbolise white. Yes, white and green. Very symbolic.
He waited. He was not unfortunately disappointed. What of? The senior wrangler coughed.
I'm not sure that there has to be an of, he said.
Ah, so, said the Arch-Chancellor thoughtfully, it could be said that the white and green symbolise a small parasitic plant.
Yes, indeed, said the senior wrangler.
So mistletoe, in fact, symbolises mistletoe.
Exactly, Arch-Chancellor, said the senior wrangler, who was now just hanging on.
Funny thing, that, said Ridcully, in the same thoughtful tone of voice. That statement is either so deep it would take a lifetime to fully comprehend every particle of its meaning, or it is a load of absolute tosh. Which is it, I wonder?
It could be both, said the senior wrangler desperately.
And that comment, said Ridcully, is either very perceptive or very trite.
It might be both.
Don't push it, senior wrangler. There was a hammering on the outer door.
Ah, that'll be the Wassellers, said the senior wrangler, happy for the distraction. They call on us first every year. I personally have always liked the lily-white boys, you know.
The Arch-Chancellor glanced up at the mistletoe, gave the beaming man a sharp look and opened the little hatch in the door. Well now, wassailing you fellows, he began. Oh well, I must say you might have picked a better time. A hooded figure stepped through the wood of the door, carrying a limp bundle over its shoulder. The senior wrangler stepped backwards quickly.
Oh, no, not tonight.
And then he noticed that what he had taken for a robe had lace around the bottom, and the hood, while quite definitely a hood, was nevertheless rather more stylish than the one he had first mistaken it for. Putting down or taking away, said Ridcully. Susan pushed back her hood.
I need your help, Mr. Ridcully, she said.
Aren't you Death's granddaughter? Said Ridcully. Didn't I meet you a few...
Yes, sighed Susan.
And, are you helping out? Said Ridcully. His waggling eyebrows indicated the slumbering figure over her shoulder.
I need you to wake him up, said Susan.
Some sort of, miracle, you mean? Said the senior wrangler, who was a little behind.
He's not dead, said Susan. He's just resting.
That's what they all say, the senior wrangler quavered.
Ridcully, who was somewhat more practical, lifted the O-God's head. There was a groan.
Looks a bit, under the weather, he said.
He's the god of hangovers, said Susan. The O-God of hangovers.
Really? Said Ridcully. Never had one of those myself. Funny thing, I can drink all night and feel as fresh as a daisy in the morning.
The O-God's eyes opened. Then he soared towards Ridcully and started beating him on the chest with both fists.
You utter bastard. I hate you. I hate you, hate you, hate you.
His eyes shut and he slid down to the floor.
What was all that about? Said Ridcully. I think it was some kind of nervous reaction, said Susan diplomatically. Something nasty's happened tonight. I'm hoping he can tell me what it is, but he's got to be able to think straight first.
And you brought him here, said Ridcully. Ho, ho, ho. Yes, indeed. Hello, small child called Veruca Lumpy. What a lovely name. Aged 7, I believe. Good. Yes, I know it did. All over the nice clean floor, yes. They do, you know. That's one of the things about real pigs. Here we are. Don't mention it. Happy Hogs Watch and be good. I will know if you're good or bad, you know. Ho, ho, ho.
Well, you brought some magic into that little life, said Albert, as the next child was hurried away.
It's the expression on their little faces I like, said the Hogfather.
You mean sort of fear and awe and not knowing whether to laugh or cry or wet their pants?
Yes, now that is what I call belief.
The O-God was carried into the great hall and laid out on a bench.
The senior wizards gathered round, ready to help those less fortunate than themselves remain that way.
"I know what's good for a hangover," said the Dean, who was feeling in a party mood. They looked at him expectantly. "Drinking heavily the previous night," he said. He beamed at them.
"That was a good word joke," he said, to break the silence. The silence came back.
"Most amusing," said Ridcully.
He turned back and stared thoughtfully at the O-God.
"Raw eggs are said to be good," he glared at the Dean. "I mean, bad for a hangover," he said. "And fresh orange juice."
"Clatchian coffee," said the lecturer in recent runes, firmly.
"But this fellow hasn't just got his hangover, he's got everyone's hangover," said Ridcully.
"I've tried it," mumbled the O-God. "It just makes me feel suicidal and sick."
"A mixture of mustard and horseradish," said the Chair of Indefinite Studies, "in cream for preference with anchovies."
"Yogurt," said the bursar.
Ridcully looked at him, surprised.
"That sounded almost relevant," he said. "Well done. I should leave it at that if I were you, bursar. Of course, my uncle always used to swear at wow-wow sauce," he added.
"You mean swear by, surely," said the lecturer in recent runes.
"Possibly both," said Ridcully. "I know he once drank a whole bottle of it as a hangover cure, and it certainly seemed to cure him. He looked very peaceful when they came to lay him out."
"Willow bark," said the bursar.
"That's a good idea," said the lecturer in recent runes. "It's an analgesic."
"Really? Well, possibly, though it's probably better to give it to him by mouth," said Ridcully. "I say, are you feeling yourself, bursar? You seem somewhat coherent."
The O-God opened his crusted eyes.
"Will all that stuff help?" he mumbled.
"It'll probably kill you," said Susan.
"Oh, good."
"We could add Engelbert's enhancer," said the Dean. "Remember when Modo put some on his peas? We could only manage one each."
"Can't you do something more, well, magical," said Susan. "Magic the alcohol out of him or something."
"Yes, but it's not alcohol by this time, is it?" said Ridcully. "It'll have turned into a lot of nasty little poisons all dancing round his liver."
"Spold's unstirring divisor would do it," said the lecturer in recent runes. "Very simply, too. You'd end up with a large beaker full of all the nasties. Not difficult at all, if you don't mind the side effects."
"Tell me about the side effects," said Susan, who had met wizards before.
"The main one is that the rest of him would end up in a somewhat larger beaker," said the lecturer in recent runes.
"Alive?"
The lecturer in recent runes screwed up his face and waggled his hands. "Broadly, yes," he said. "Living tissue, certainly, and definitely sober."
"I think we had in mind something that would leave him the same shape and still breathing," said Susan.
"Well, you might have said."
Then the Dean repeated the mantra that has had such a marked effect on the progress of knowledge throughout the ages.
"Why don't we just mix up absolutely everything and see what happens?" he said.
And Ridcully responded with the traditional response.
"It's got to be worth a try," he said.